This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Come on, girl. Yeah. It's me, Jackie Murray. Give me that look. That's right. Let's get sweaty. Let's get real sweaty. I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill a bathtub full of sweat. All right.
Everyone wants to love the sexy. Hello, sports fans. Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. We have a happier crew in here tonight. We'll be talking about why, but a little bit of doom and gloom on last week's lounge, and it seems like the concerns have been lifted for the time being. So I'm your host, of course, the cowboy, Roger Morissette, and joined in the lounge, we have two people in the lounge tonight, which is more than we've had the last couple of weeks at the beginning of the show. We have, making his triumphant return for you wrestling fans back there, out there, I know there's a lot of you. You know, finally, Keith has returned to the Sports Lounge. What's up, Keith?
Not much, Raj. What's going on?
Not much. Great to have you back, buddy. Hockey does start tonight, right? So,
absolutely.
You're going to be our guy for hockey because it's certainly not going to be the cowboy. Cowboys and ice don't really mix, you know. Yeah, great to have Keith back. He's been on about a two-week sabbatical, and we really missed him here. So this is it's an exciting night in the lounge. And also, the straw that stirs the drink, Cowboy Senior. Cowboy Senior's in the lounge. How you doing, Cowboy Senior?
All right. Feeling really good this week. Ready to rock and roll here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So for those of our listeners who weren't there, we celebrated Cowboy Senior's 29th birthday over at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, big supporters of Place to Be Nation. We did about a 12-hour shift there, culminated. You know, it was a great day all around, lots of family and friends in and out. Cowboy Senior tipped a few back, which is always good to see, and culminated with what we're going to go over first here, and I think this is been the big story in the NFL for the past couple of weeks. Last week we talked about what's wrong with the New England Patriots and gave some predictions, and there was a lot of doom and gloom. We had some trade Tom Brady from Rock. We had Cowboy Senior saying if they keep it within 10, it's a moral victory. And then you had the Cowboy pick them to win. And what happened? They came out.
Made a no cowboy.
They came out, and I predicted them to win. I thought they would win a close, low-scoring game, and they came out and put up, you know, 43 points on the stout Cincinnati defense. They turned back the clock. It looked like a completely different team from six nights previous. Now, as with most things in the NFL and in life, really. The truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. You know, they're not as bad as they looked against Oakland and Miami. They're probably not as good as what they played on Sunday night in that drubbing. I think there was a lot of emotion involved in that game. You know, the Belichick way, the Patriots way, is to claim that, you know, just focused on the next game, and we're not taking what the media says to heart, but I think their actions, particularly Brady's actions on the field, told a different story. One of the reasons I picked the Pats to win was I felt like they had desperation on their side, and they did play like a desperate team, like it was their Super Bowl, and they just overwhelmed the Bengals. So, Keith, since you're back for the first time in a couple of weeks, what were some of the takeaways for you from the Pats' big victory?
Well, the first thing was the play of the offensive line. For the first time all season, they stuck with the same five guys. which was good. It looked like they had a little continuity there. The Bengals didn't get much push at all. As a matter of fact, the Pats line was the one doing the pushing. They ran the ball, 40 times or so? The ground game looked awesome. I think Brady only got sacked once. Not many hurries. It actually looked like the Patriots team that we're used to seeing from the past few years, where Brady's standing in the back and he's got time to go through his progressions and whatnot. That was the biggest thing. The other thing was the fact that he got a lot of different receivers involved, mainly the new tight end, Tim Wright, the guy they traded for Logan Mankins. He looked pretty good. I mean, he only played about 20 snaps, but he had 5 targets, 5 catches, 85 yards, and a score. So he kind of filled in that old Aaron Hernandez role with the second tight end, you know, kind of a flex guy. He looked pretty good. Brandon LaFell got a few targets. He made it 1 catch or so. The one thing that does concern me is still the outside receivers. LaFell has been there before. Dobson has only played a couple games, and he hasn't quite gotten going yet, but I think that will come with time. And the defense was awesome this past week. They finally unleashed Revis. One-on-one, you go man up A.J. Green, take him out of the game. And I think for the most part he did. It was evident when he came off the field for a few plays, and the first play, they went right at Logan Ryan, who replaced Revis, for a touchdown to A.J. Green. I think with Browner coming back this week, hopefully he plays this week, the defense is just going to get that much better. I was very happy with what I saw from the Patriots this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I predicted them to win, my thought was that what had happened in Kansas City was so bad that it was going to force them to change things up. And I said Ridley's going to get 25 carries. If you're listening, Rock, he got a little more than 50 yards. And with a new offensive line with some new pieces, it's a lot easier to go out there and just play smash mouth. And the run just set it up. The run set up the pass, and it was a beautiful thing to watch. And another thing that I thought was maybe the most encouraging thing of the evening outside of the offensive line play for the team's long-term prospects was that for the first time all season, Rob Gronkowski looked like Rob Gronkowski. And the injury report came out today, and for the first time, I think since I was about 15 years old, he's not on it. He's not on it at all. So, a senior, any takeaways for you?
Absolutely. The thing that I had been talking about all along, and I said, was if they could fix the offensive line, that offense would be able to function, and that would kill all the talk of Brady slipping, and maybe some of the other things that we thought were problems wouldn't look like such problems. Well, Ryan Wendell coming back from injury was huge, and a great move by the coaching staff, playing him at guard instead of center. Playing Conley at the other guard, and you got Fulmer and Nate Solder at the tackles. Now you've got 4 guys there with experience instead of playing a bunch of rookies. And you've got the rookie at center who, even though they got thrashed against Kansas City, that was just an ultimate baptism for that guy, starting his first game ever in the NFL in that environment where they had to go on silent counts all day and everything else to be the starting center for your first time. And I'm not saying he played great, but he came through it okay, and I think they saw something that they liked there. They put this together, and it just worked unbelievable. The thing that I heard a lot of the so-called inside people praising Ryan Wendell's play at guard. So I watched the game on NFL Rewind, which you could see the whole game in a half hour, and I just focused on the number 62. And that was a Pro Bowl performance by him. Most plays, he was just ending out. His man was just down. He was wiping people out. He was pass blocking extremely well. And I also noticed that him and Stork were outstanding together in tandem, making kind of combo blocks. And it kind of makes sense because Wendell understands exactly what Stork's role is because he's a natural center. I think we found something. I think we've really found the guard here. Things to be concerned about. Obviously, it's only one game. Also, it's only five guys. They finally went with just five guys, and they found a great combination. If any of those five would go down, which you can't expect too often, these offensive linemen all stay healthy all year. It's the nature of the beast of the position. Obviously, we're worried about the depth of that position because when the other guys were playing, it didn't go very well. But with these five guys intact, beautiful. They were able to run the ball, the run set up the play action. You might want to say you're a little concerned that the outside receivers didn't contribute that much, but I think it was the Patriots' offense finding something and giving what the taking what the defense was giving them. And if the defense was giving them outside, that's where they would have went. It's classic Patriots taking what the defense is giving them. They found the tight ends running down the seams off the play action was wide open, and they just exploited it all day to Gronk and Wright. And that was beautiful. The running game was beautiful. Defensively, obviously, the Revis playing man, shutting down A.J. Green. He actually only caught one ball with Revis when Revis was playing him, and Revis stripped him on that play.
Mm-hmm.
That's just outstanding. If you can do that to A.J. Green, you can shut down anybody. So I'm glad they finally used him that way, and I hope you continue to use him that way. Things you still might want to be a little concerned, as great as the performance was, to find any negatives. The defense played well, but they were helped a few times by a couple of key drops. One I remember by Gresham that really saved them. And there were a couple of times that Dalton missed guys running free. Not A.J. Green. He was never running free. But Dalton had some plays that he had that he didn't make. But still, it was still a much better performance by the defense. They did a much better job against the run. And they kind of didn't place Chandler Jones every down, and that was their way of solving him getting run at. He was mostly in passing situations, and
yeah. That
seemed to work. So definitely a whole lot to be encouraged about. And I said it last week, I've said it all along, Brady slipping baloney. Offensive line plays well, you don't have to worry about number 12. He'll take care of his end. And any crazy thoughts of we're going to trade Brady because the offensive line's bad? No, we're supposed to be a good team. We played in the AFC title. We played in the AFC title game last year. We went 12-4 in the regular season. You fix the problem. You have to address the offensive line and fix it. And you got one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. He's going to take care of his end, and that's just the way it worked out. And it's going to be another big test this week. We'll see, but that was a great step for the Pats.
Absolutely. So thanks, Cowboy Senior. So taking a look on the other side of the ball, my personal feeling on the Bengals, my feelings haven't changed. I still think they're gonna represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. I think it was just kind of a wrong place, wrong time situation for them. They really ran into a buzzsaw in Foxborough. One thing Chris Collinsworth mentioned a bit, and he was right, is that they don't seem to play their best when the lights are brightest, and that's something they're going to have to work on, because I mean they looked like absolute world beaters for their first three games, and they did not look that way on Sunday. And then, kind of hot off the presses here on a Wednesday, A.J. Green re-aggravated his, toe injury in practice today, had to get carted off the field, and there's talk of shutting him down for a couple of weeks, which definitely does hurt them a bit in the short term. You guys have any thoughts on the Bengals?
Go ahead, Keith.
I was just going to say, I don't think they're as bad as they looked Sunday night. I agree with you, Raj. This team will definitely be a playoff team. But like you said, when the lights come on, they don't seem to show up. All their primetime games, they don't look good, and we know what their record is in the playoffs. But if A.J. Green is out for a while, that's going to hurt them big time. But I still think with their running game and their solid defense, they can still win. And I think they're going to win that division still.
Yeah, and I mean, that defense is really, I mean, the defense is a lot better than what they looked like on Sunday night. Senior?
Yeah, definitely. I like the Bengals. I said it right from the beginning that they're a solid team top to bottom. Little things to be concerned with. I think their one weakness is they have a little trouble stopping the run. And maybe getting a guy like Burfict back will help to solve it. I had said last week, I thought that was a possibility that the Pats would be able to run on this team, because if they have one little weakness, I mean, they are a complete team, but everybody has weaknesses, and if you're going to search for a weakness, their run defense is a little bit suspect, and certainly having their best run stopper out doesn't help that situation. But that's a little bit of an Achilles heel, and as we've said, and what Collinsworth said, man, playoff games, they haven't come through this week, this past week, which was a game that got a lot of hype. They kind of didn't come through, but I don't know if I'm going to hold this one over their head, because I think this was just one of those weeks where you didn't want to be the opposing team coming into Foxborough.
Yeah, I don't care which team came into Foxborough this past weekend. They were going to get the Patriots' best. So
absolutely,
I think the stars were aligned. Yes.
So looking ahead for both teams, Pats real tough game this week in Buffalo. It's for the division. You know, 3-2. Both teams sitting at 3-2, and Buffalo making what has been a successful change at quarterback so far. We talked about it a little last week before it happened, and we thought that it would be that it wasn't a bad thing for them, and they pulled the biggest upset of the week going into Detroit in a game that I didn't think they had much of a chance in, and really playing well and winning the game on a bomb 58-yard field goal as time expired. I think this is a really, really difficult game for the Patriots. I think Buffalo's strengths kind of play into the Patriots' weaknesses, particularly Buffalo's front four is vicious. And I think the Pats are going to have a hard time running the ball. If they have a hard time running the ball, we've seen that things can get away from them very quickly. I think it's just a matter that the Patriots' defense is really going to need to show up in this game for them to win, because I don't see them putting a 40 spot up in Buffalo.
No.
My personal feel, I mean, I like the way Kyle Orton played exactly how you thought he would. Targeted the heck out of Sammy Watkins, which is what you want to do when you have a talent like that. One big negative for the Bills is their just lack of a running game so far this year. I mean, they're handing off a lot. It's just those guys are not getting going too much. And I would think there's going to be a concerted effort on their part to establish the run against the Patriots, where the run defense has been a bit of a weakness. And they didn't defend the run that great against the Bengals. It's just they got up by so much, the Bengals started having to throw on every play. So, yeah, I'm going to pick. I think Buffalo is going to win this game. Keith.
I'm going to disagree with you there. I think the Patriots are going to pull it out. I don't think it's going to be a game like the Cincinnati game where they win by 30, but I think the experience and the way they looked last week, I think they're going to carry some momentum over. Like you said, though, that the front four in Buffalo is some kind of nasty. And I think Kyle Williams, is that his name, the big run stuffer? I think he's coming back this week from an injury, so
right.
That's only going to make him even stronger. But we'll see if that offensive line can gel like they did last week for the Pats. They're going to stick with those same five guys. You know, maybe they throw a few more screens, a little quick pass to kind of slow the rush down. You're right, I don't think they're going to run the ball as efficiently as they did against Cincinnati, but, you know, I think it was Bill Parcells that said it's not about what you do in the run, how many yards you're getting when you run the ball, it's how many times you run the ball. So they got to, you know, that kind of negates the pass rush there. So keep feeding the ball to Ridley and Vereen. Short passing game, use the tight ends. I think they can still pull it out. Defensively, the Patriots' defense, I think, is a little better than Detroit's. And Kyle Orton, if he keeps feeding Sammy Watkins the ball and Darrelle Revis is following him around the field, you're going to see a few picks in this game. I would say like a 2017, 23-20 kind of game. But I'm going to give the Pats the edge.
Yeah,
I think they're going to roll off a few in a row.
That's the kind of game I see too, Keith. And I mean, I think if they decide, if the Bills' game plan is is to attack the Patriots secondary like that, I think the Patriots will win. If you look at the Pats defense and you look at the Lions defense, it's kind of two very different defenses. The Lions are one of the best run defenses in the NFL. The Patriots are one of the best pass defenses in the NFL. So I think Buffalo is going to really try to establish Spiller and Jackson and then work play action a little later in the game. What do you think, Senior? How do you see this one playing out?
Well, you look at the Bills' numbers, and I think you got to go a little deeper. Okay, they're only giving up 71 yards a game on the ground. That's absolutely outstanding, second in the league. Digging a little deeper into that, however, some of it is schedule because they haven't played. Okay, they played Houston, one team with a really good running game. Besides that, Chicago, Miami, San Diego, Detroit, not exactly prolific rushing offenses. Their defense has played very well. Last year, stopping the run was the Achilles, one of their problems. They couldn't stop the run last year. And we talked about in our preseason report about the Bills how they addressed their problems. They got Watkins because they had trouble passing the ball. They beefed up with some run stoppers. Their front four is as good as it gets with Darius and the Williams boys. But they weren't a great run-stopping team last year. Granted, they've addressed it, but I don't think you give up the idea of running on them. I think the Pats are definitely going to try and establish some run on them. The other thing that I got to think you might have to look a little deeper into, as much as it was a great upset last week, them beating Detroit. Okay, they won with their defense mainly. Here's what their offense did. I mean, we're saying Orton played well. Yeah, he threw a pick six, which not good. So their defense played phenomenal because they held the Lions to 7 points. After that, he chucked the ball 43 times. And, did okay. Put up 17 points. Not a huge number of points. They really won the game. A big reason is Alex Henry going 0-for-3, not being able to kick a field goal to save his life. I mean, if they had even a reasonable NFL kicker kicking, they wouldn't have won that game, most likely. So, again, you gotta kind of dig a little deeper. And also, they were fortunate enough to have Megatron go out in the beginning of the third quarter, so that certainly helped their defense. And Megatron didn't come back. Golden Tate
and Reggie Bush.
So I'm not bashing Buffalo because I like the Bills. I've said I like them. I'm just saying it all might not be quite as impressive as it looks on the surface. I think the Pats are going to try to establish the run against them and will be able to run the ball well enough that it'll help their play, get their play action working. And I see a really hard-fought game. I see Buffalo. I don't see Kyle Orton throwing the ball 43 times against the Patriots. I agree with you, Cowboy, that they're a team that really wants to run first, get that two-headed monster of running backs that they have finally going, which they haven't been able to do last week against Detroit. Okay, really hard against that front seven to run. Agreed. But I think they're going to try to establish it this week. And that might be the telling tale of who wins the game, whichever team can more effectively get the running game going. I see a hard-fought, physical game, and the Pats coming through with a character victory, 21-13, Patriots. Imagine that. I got Matt Prater kicking two field goals because they are going to have
Dan Carpenter.
Yeah, Carpenter, a good kicker. Okay, he'll kick two field goals. I see 21-13, Patriots.
All right, so the Cowboys out on an island again, which seems to be the norm here, especially when it comes to the Pats. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a great game. Taking a briefer look at the Bengals' next opponent, I think this is a good game. Panthers at Bengals. The Panthers, Keith, I'll give you credit where it's due. We haven't spoken in a few weeks, but the Panthers' defense has completely fallen off a cliff. I mean, they're 3-2. It's kind of an ugly 3-2, given, how poorly that defense has played. They great win against Chicago last week and a nice come from behind victory. But do you give the defense credit in the second half, or is it just that Jay Cutler doesn't play well in the second half, because that seems to be what happens. He's 240 yards and two touchdowns in the first half, and then ends the game with 270 yards and two touchdowns. Yeah. He's done that 2 weeks in a row. I was encouraged by Cam. Cam looked a little more healthy, ran around a little bit more. I mean, he's a tremendous quarterback, because he's really developed with this rib injury and not being able to run. He's really developed into a pocket passer and a good pocket passer. With all that said, I don't think if this game was in Carolina, I would give them a real good shot to take out the Bengals. I think even without AJ Green in Cincinnati, I think it's too big of a hill to climb, especially a Cincinnati team that's going to probably be pretty pissed off after the drubbing they took last week. So I think the Bengals win comfortably, but not a laugher, kind of a 30-21 type of deal. How do you see this one playing out, Keith?
Yeah, I see it, like you said, a slugfest. The Panthers, I think their biggest problem so far has been stopping the run.
Big time.
I don't know if that's attributed to the fact that Greg Hardy's not there. No, he hasn't been playing. He was one of their best linemen, if not their best lineman. But I was very shocked to see that. The teams are just running all over them. Especially with Keekly out on the field. I don't understand it. But I think the Bengals are going to come out, especially without A.J. Green, and really try to pound the ball. They'd be crazy if they didn't. But, yeah, I see that, 2017-type game. And I'll give the Bengals the edge for being at home. But, yeah, it should be a pretty good game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Senior, do you have anything different on this one?
Well, the Bengals... Carolina is another Carolina problem. Even though they've been putting points up, their offense has really been one-dimensional. They're not running the ball at all. They put it all on the back of Cam. And I think the Bengals' defense could feast on that. They'll be able to pin their ears back and tee off, and it could be a little bit of a tough road for Cam. And as far as the other side of the ball goes, they have gone 10 quarters playing awful defense, and we could... say some of it is a history of Cutler having bad second halves, but you saw that Carolina defense really got aggressive in the second half of that game, especially down the stretch when they smelled the blood and they needed to make plays to win. The last two possessions, they strip-sacked one by Antoine Kaysen and one by Keenan Short. They strip-sacked Cutler where he didn't even see the guy coming twice in a row, the two last possessions. That's how that defense closed the game out, so... maybe the Carolina defense is going to stop being the Carolina defense again. I don't know who those guys were that played for 10 quarters there. It's hard to believe that they're that bad. I still don't see them winning in Cincinnati. No way. They're too one-dimensional on offense to beat a complete team like Cincinnati. And their defense, let's face it, is still there's definitely questions. So, yeah, I'd say the Bengals, and it's hard to break it. To predict the score, because I think the Bengals will probably score more points if A.J. Green plays, but I'll still say 27-14 Bengals.
All right, so we're pretty much all in agreement there. The other game of the week, at least in my humble opinion, was Baltimore at Indianapolis. A couple of powers at this point in the AFC, and all three of us actually picked the Ravens to win in Indianapolis. Didn't happen. I give a lot of credit to Indy's D in this game, because the Ravens D played great holding. Luck's just been so good this year, and that offense has been so good this year. And if you would have told me going into the game that the Colts would only score 20 points, I would have predicted a 10-point Ravens win. But the Colts D stepped up, held the Ravens to 13, held Cowboy Senior's favorite player other than Tom Brady in the NFL, Steve Smith Senior, really held him in check. It was it had almost a playoff game kind of feel. And I thought good solid win for the Colts. It's the kind of game that the past Colts teams don't win, those smash mouth kind of games. So Cowboy Senior, what do you think of that one?
For a 20-13 score, kind of a, we're saying the Ravens D played well. They did play well, but it was really a bend-don't-break defense. The Colts were marching up and down the field on them all day long, and when they got in the red zone, the Ravens' red zone defense was just fabulous, and that's what kind of kept them in the game. It's a real different kind of win for the Colts, to win without piling up points. But their offense did dominate the game just without putting points up. I mean, time of possession, the Colts had the ball 38 minutes and 43 seconds. They had the ball two-thirds of the game. It's just that they cash in when they got in the red zone. The Colts D did play very well. Their pass rush was ferocious. They had four sacks of Flacco and a whole bunch of other pressures. And the Colts D also did just take away the outside receivers, really. Steve Smith and Torrey Smith were just completely taken out of the game. So it's the Colts showing that they could win in a different way. They could win when they're not getting it in the end zone, and they kind of played a dink and, a run game slash dink and dump passing game kind of offense, which gave them a lot of ball control, a lot of long drives, and kept the Ravens' offense off the field, which helped their defense a lot. I mean, the defense held them to 13, but they didn't have to be on the field much to do it. So the Colts showing that they can win in a different way, and a tough loss for the Ravens. They were in the game. I still think they're a good team. This was a game, again, with two good teams that was, again, if you would have said 20-13, that I would have reaffirmed that's probably Ravens. You know, the Colts, you're winning even more of a shootout type game, but I think it's a real positive for the Colts that they can win a game like this.
Absolutely, and we'll give Keith some credit here in that a lot of us here on the lounge were very much down on Baltimore, and Keith not only said that they were better than we were saying, but he called Steve Smith having a huge impact there. So, and that certainly was the case.
Yeah.
So, good job, Keith. So the
I'm still the same guy though that predicted Richardson would have 1,200 yards.
Oh, I was gonna come on. I was not even gonna bring it up. Wasn't even gonna bring
well,
it up.
I'll bring it
wait
up
till next week.
He's only got about 1,000 yards to go now.
I think he's probably exceeded expectations. So, Keith, that's a good segue, because when we had that Trent Richardson conversation, the other guy you were real high on that night was Ryan Fitzpatrick. And that's where tomorrow night, so we're taping this on a Wednesday, so by the time our fans listen to it, it's going to be posted on Thursday, so tonight, the Colts are visiting Houston, Thursday night football. Thursday night's been crazy this year. Usually you would just kind of see, not a lot of offense and kind of, sloppy games. Well, this year has been the year of the absolute blowout. Yeah. I don't see that this week. I thought even in a loss, I thought Houston looked pretty good in Dallas, particularly defensively and running the ball. And I know the numbers don't back me up, but I still feel like this Colts defense is pretty weak up the middle. I think Foster's really going to be able to get off in this game. And with Houston with the home field, I think they take it. I like Houston in this one. What do you think, Keith?
I'm going to disagree. I think Indy goes in on the road and wins. I do agree that Houston will be able to run the ball. The only thing is, with the short week and Arian Foster's nursing that hamstring, I don't know if he's going to get the ball 23 times this week. You might see a little more Alfred Blue than you did last week. But I just think Ryan Fitzpatrick, as you were saying, his true colors, if Indy gets up, maybe by two scores or so, and Fitzpatrick has to throw the ball, you're going to see the true colors come out. And I think it's going to be just like every other Thursday night. A 30-point ass-whooping.
Wow, I was just going to say, yeah. If you told me beforehand Indy's going to get up two scores, I'd probably pick him to win.
Every Thursday night game, the margin of victory has been 29 points on Thursday nights. I don't know if that's just a fluke or coincidence, but I think it's you're going to see the same thing this week, too.
Yeah, and I think... Indy's
a real good team. I really like that team.
They are a good team. And I think what's discounted a lot when people are doing analysis, and I say this all the time, is just how important home field is in the NFL. If this game was in Indy, I'd probably pick them to win the game by 10 points. The fact that it's in Houston swings me to like a 3-point Houston victory. And senior, do you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, what you just said about home field, you can multiply that mucho with Thursday. It's even more important on a Thursday. It's really, really difficult to beat a team that travels on that super short week. So I think that bumps Houston's advantage up even more. This looks like a close game on paper to me. I see Houston more trying to ground and pound, trying to get Arian Foster going. If they can do that, then maybe Fitzpatrick gets some play action going. I see that high profile, high flying Indy offense with Luck coming out and winging it, and a real interesting game, a real close game, and one that's so hard to call that I'm just going to pick Houston to win on the basis of home field, because I think home field, if you want to say it means 5 or 6 points on a Sunday, it means 10 points on a Thursday. It's just a huge advantage to be the home team in that short week, and these teams are pretty evenly matched. I think we are finally going to get. I think it's fluky that all the Thursday night games have been blowouts. I mean, it can't have anything to do with the fact that you play on Thursday. It's a one-sided game. That's nuts. And this looks like a great matchup. I think we're finally going to get a really good game on a Thursday night. And I say Houston, and with both teams in the 20s, like 27-24-ish, 24-21-ish, something like that, Houston by a field goal.
All right. Keith's on the island for that one. If you're going to be on an island, being there with Andrew Luck's not the worst place to be.
That's right.
Am I right or am I right?
I got the luck on my side.
They're also billing this as the battle of the two guys who are the front runners for NFL MVP right now, J.J. Watt and Andrew Luck, and they go head-to-head with each other. So that's going to be real interesting to watch.
Watt needs
an unbelievable year so far.
Watt needs to not miss Luck like he did Romo. Did you guys see that play in the dead to
rights? That was a great play by Tony Romo, though.
It was. I mean, we'll talk about them. But that was an excellent game. It was a real weird game in that this Cowboys defense, again, that everybody has just crapped all over, is really, really not played bad. And that game, I think, was 3-0 in beginning of the third quarter, right? And some points at the end. That catch by Dez Bryant was freaking incredible. I mean, what a catch!
That was the game.
So
that overtime catch was the play of the year so far. I mean, that play won the game for him in the overtime. That was just fabulous. And the Texans had played a good game too. I mean, they really got Foster going in this one. As you would have thought, though, against the Cowboys' defense, you would have thought they could run on them. And, I mean, that was just a great game, a real evenly matched game. And a great player came up with a great play in overtime, and you win. And Romo also made some really nice plays, too. I mean, Romo completely outplayed Fitzpatrick, but the Texans hung in with their running game, which doesn't surprise you.
Yeah, I don't think they're hanging their hat on Fitzpatrick outplaying Luck this week, so we have to do it some other way. So, not to be a troll, but when Tom Brady watches Tony Romo just talk it up and sees Dez Bryant come down with it, do you think he's jealous?
I would say so.
What do you think,
Steve? Especially because the Patriots could have drafted Dez Bryant.
Right, or just it's such a luxury. And you look at, A.J. Green, you look at all the good, most of the good teams have a guy like that. And it's such a luxury to, okay.
Tom may have a guy like that too. When he gets to be 100% healthy, he just plays a different position. It's kind of nice to have the security blanket and a number 87 on the Patriots. A lot of quarterbacks might be jealous of that.
Agreed. That's cool. Great tight end. It's a little different, but it's a great tight end. All right.
So, amazing things for you, though.
We have the Ravens this week in a interesting game. They're traveling to Tampa. Tampa, who, since getting falling victim to one of those Thursday night drubbings, the worst Thursday night drubbing to Atlanta, since they've installed Mike Glennon at quarterback, have played considerably better with a with a big upset win against Pittsburgh and very, very nearly a bigger upset win in New Orleans, where nobody wins. They made New Orleans really pull that game out of the fire. So what do you make of this Bucks team, Senior? I know you were high on them at the start of the season.
Yeah, they're not that bad of a team, and it's too bad their record is what it is now. But, yeah, it's a hard road to climb. I mean, if you look at them statistically, they're not doing anything that well at all. They're really having trouble defending the pass. But, again, some of that, you know, a lot of it, and you look at stats now at this point in the season, and some of it is the teams that they've played somewhat. There's not really one thing that they can hang their hat on. They don't have a great running game. They don't have a great passing game. Their pass defense has been poor. But, again, they've played some pretty good quarterbacks.
They were in Atlanta.
Their run defense has been okay. Yeah, in Atlanta.
In New Orleans.
And, of course, New Orleans. Those two are real tough.
Outside of Denver, those are the two toughest probably pass matchups you can have in the league.
And obviously, you know, they started the wrong quarterback at the beginning of the season, and their record might be at least one game better if they didn't. You know, you say you look at the first two close game losses, you say if the way Glennon's played much, much better, if he were playing, maybe they would have grabbed one of those wins. And they're an interesting team. You kind of don't know. I mean, the thing is that they kind of had this game and just couldn't close it out. You know, they're really not that good. But then again, not too many teams are going to go into New Orleans and win, I don't think. So it was close to being a moral victory. I mean, they picked Drew Brees off three times, which, you know, even though their defense can't stop you, at least they were opportunistic. Glennon did some good things. They had a lot of trouble controlling the Saints running backs. Pierre Thomas and Kyrie Robinson is really what beat them. And, you know, I think that we can say that they do a lot of things okay, but they don't do enough really well to be a really good team.
Do you think it's enough to get it done this week, home against the Ravens?
No way. No, I think the Ravens are just too solid top to bottom. Also, coming off a tough loss, they're going to be really fired up. No, I say this is another uphill game. A very uphill game for Tampa, and like I said, the Ravens are just too solid to go in there and lose this game. I think you're in there. Tampa Bay might keep it close again, but I just don't see them having enough to get over the top against the Ravens.
I think they're going to have all sorts of problems scoring points, and I don't think the Ravens will have all sorts of problems scoring points, which is a recipe for disaster. So I'm with you, Senior. I like the Ravens in this one. Keith, you like the Ravens here?
Yeah, I think you're going to see both Smiths go off for 100 yards apiece. Tampa Bay's secondary is probably one of the worst in the league by far. Baltimore's going to crush them.
All right. So Keith's calling the blowout this week. So we'll see. So another game I want to talk about, and Senior, eventually you're going to have to eat some crow with this one, but... And maybe all of us. I mean, I don't think any of us were very high on these guys. But the New York Football Giants. Atlanta comes to town. A bad team loses that game. Atlanta's a different team on the road. I understand that. But the Giants handled them. The Giants won the game 30-20. They looked really good again. They got different guys involved this time. ODB, Odell Beckham, made his first appearance of the season, and he looked good. They lost Jennings, and Andre Williams came in and looked good. Eli's playing well. The defense is playing well enough. I don't think we'll call it a great defense by any stretch, but they're playing well enough. They're holding up against some pretty good offenses. And the Giants, and as a larger story, the NFC least, that most people consider the worst division in football coming into the season, you have the Cowboys at 4-1, the Eagles at 4-1, and the Giants at 3-2. Maybe they're not the worst division in football, and maybe this Giants team isn't nearly as bad as we thought. Keith, do you have any thoughts on the G-men?
Pleasantly surprised with them. I really am. Eli, the first couple games, I mean, he looked lost. Maybe it's just trying to get used to that new West Coast offense, but the last few games, man, he's been playing really, really well, not turning the ball over. The running game has been spectacular. Rashad Jennings has been one of the best backs in the league. I think that might hurt a little with him going down, but like you said, Andre Williams stepped right in and, you know, he filled that gap. The receiving corps is pretty good with Randall, Cruz, and now Beckham. And then that Larry Donnell, is that his name?
That's his name.
A tight end. He's been playing pretty well as too. I think they're going to contend for this division.
Yeah,
I don't think Dallas is as good as their 4-1 record. And Philly, I don't trust Philadelphia's defense. I mean, they can score a ton of points, but I don't like their D. I think the Giants will be in it.
Yeah, and I think we're going to go in depth on Philly and Dallas a little later too, because I think those are both real interesting teams to talk about. And Senior, I think a lot of the Giants' success, much like the Pats, has been they're very much maligned offensive line coming into the season. Huge question mark. Eli's got no time. Well, they're playing a little bit better. The new offense has him getting the ball out quicker. And all of a sudden, he's not throwing nearly as many of what you would call his signature pass. Do you have thoughts?
Well, in this game in particular, I'm going to temper all the G-Man optimism. They just beat Atlanta. Okay, 30-20. They were down 20-10 in the game. Atlanta's defense is horrible. Okay? The week before, you know, you just got to go back 1 week. Atlanta lost 41-28 to Minnesota. That's right, 41 points given up to the Vikings. Also, Atlanta's strength, their offense, their passing game. Okay, the Giants held them to 20. They played well, absolutely. But the last couple of weeks, their offensive line, guys have been dropping like flies. Their offensive line is just decimated by injuries. So that makes their offense a heck of a lot more vulnerable and not as impressive. So, yeah. Okay, they beat a DB team with an awful defense, with a banged-up offensive line. Yeah, they look good. Beckham looked good at receiver, I agree. Of course, he liked playing better. I mean, this team, Atlanta's defense will make a lot of quarterbacks look good. So I'm going to hold back the praise a little bit on the Giants on this one and say, okay, a win is a win, and they did what they were supposed to do, and they won the game, but I'm not that impressed by it.
Oh, Senior, you're a tough guy to please. So, I mean, what the Giants did the week before, they went into Washington and performed quite a bit better than the Super Bowl champions did this Monday night. Quite a bit better.
That was an impressive win. They made Cousins look real bad. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I think they're for real. I mean, I'm not, you know, maybe not winning a Super Bowl for real, but they're certainly not the, I mean, I believe we called them, or was it you, Senior, who called them the worst team in football earlier?
Okay, I'll take that one. I'll eat a little crow on that one, but I'm still not sold on them.
All right. And
I wouldn't call them a contender.
So they have this is a great game Sunday night. Giants at Eagles. The Eagles are the least impressive. I mean, I'll just, the least impressive 4-0-1 team I've ever seen in my life. They I mean, their offense is supposed to be high flying. I don't think their offense is playing that great. Foles has taken massive steps back, in my opinion. They can't run the ball at all, and their defense is terrible. I don't really know how they're 4-1.
Special teams.
Special teams. There you go. And their defense is scoring points, too. That's a good point, Keith.
Yeah.
The defense hasn't – they give – you know, it's kind of having a joke watching them play. Saying, you know, when Philly's D is on the field, either they're going to score a touchdown or the other team's going to score a touchdown with, like, no in-between at all. But it's I think it is a real tough game to call on Sunday night. If it was in New York, I'd really, really like the Giants. In Philly, that can go one of two ways, right? Because Philly's one of those places where the home field advantage is great unless you have a bad quarter or two, at which point the crowd turns on you. So I think the way this game starts is very, very important. They really need to get McCoy going. I mean, I have no idea what the problem is. I mean, he's not even averaging 3 yards carry. If they can do that early, jump out to a little bit of a lead, I think the Eagles win and probably win by double digits. If the Giants jump out, touchdown, some, you know, pick from Foles, something like that, I can see them coming in and winning the game. I'm going to pick the G-Men to win that game and do so by double digits. I'm just not impressed with Philly. What do you think, Keith?
Well, I'm gonna give Philly the edge because they're at home. And I think they're pretty even. You know, Eli has been known to throw a pick or two, and that's how the Eagles actually have been scoring. They either, you know, block punts or fumble recoveries for touchdowns. So, and I see them being able to spread the Giants' defense out a little bit, maybe use the backs coming out of the backfield, you know, make a big game from, like, Darren Sproles or McCoy, even in the passing game, maybe not so much running the ball, but I'm going to give them the edge in this one. I've already picked a few road teams to blow people out, so I got to take a home team here or there.
Hey, and Senior, why don't you talk a little bit about what you saw with the Eagles' very unimpressive victory on Sunday, where they, you know, where they almost did the what we call here is the Pittsburgh, which is almost breaking the record for giving up for biggest blown lead in the history of the league, but not quite doing it.
Yeah, they had a 34-7 lead. Like we said, not really without really their offense doing much. You know, two of the touchdowns were fumble recoveries, and one was a block punt. There's 21 of the points, and then their very suspect defense allowed Austin Davis to throw for 375 yards and three touchdowns and almost come all the way back 34-28. I agree with everything you're saying, that the Eagles 4-1 and they're not playing well at all. And you got to wonder when this kind of luck is going to run out. I mean, you can keep winning games like this. The other thing is, I think last year it took that offense a little while to get the treads under them and really get rolling, and I don't know if, you know, I don't know if the same thing's going to happen with the Chip Kelly offense this year. We know it's capable. We just haven't seen it yet this year. And will this be the week? Who knows? I said all the things that I'm not super impressed about by the G-Men. The G-Men do have a good run defense, so kind of hard to expect Shady to get going. You see what Austin Davis did to their defense last week, and you say Eli could very well have a good game throwing the ball. Philly gets the edge for home field, but this is going to sound crazy with me picking it, but I just think the way that Philly's been winning, I don't see that you get 5-1 that way. That's just pushing it too far. And I think the G-Men actually pull this one out. High-scoring game, G-Men win. But if they get this win and everybody's going to be all impressed, just look beyond this game and look at their schedule. We're going to see what the G-Men are made of. And you've got to count this game, too, because it's a 4-1 game. But here's their next six games. At Philly, home for Dallas, then Indy, Seattle, San Francisco, and Dallas again. So they are going through an iron stretch of their schedule right now, six games. And if I had to pick them all right now, I'd say they win this one and then lose five in a row.
Wow.
So I'm picking them this week, and it's kind of a backhanded compliment, I guess.
Oh, I think I'd pick them to beat the Cowboys in New York. That's just me, though.
Cowboys just look like a better team than them to me.
Yeah. So, well, you're on board with me, sort of, Senior. That's not faint praise from him of picking a Giants victory. I believe that's the first time all season. So, miracles do happen here on the lounge. The last thing before we go to break, I don't want to talk so much about the game, but just more about the franchise, and that's the Jets. So, we kept on saying they don't look bad, the defense looks good, and it seems like they're in a real tailspin, like just going every week worse than the next. I mean, they got completely decimated in that game. I mean, they were not in that game for 2 minutes. It was just a complete whitewash. And they benched Geno to go to Vic. And like we talked about, it would have been a lot easier to go the other way. But now they're going back to Geno. And this is kind of a repeat of what happened in his rookie season last year. where if he starts the game bad, he's going to get the hook. That happened a few times last year. I think that's a real difficult way for a quarterback to play and a quarterback to develop, constantly looking over his shoulder. And they're sitting at 1-4 with the Broncos coming to town on Sunday. So, Senior, just your thoughts on, you know, Rex Ryan came out on New York radio yesterday and said, you know, I know if we don't turn things around, I don't expect to be here, which I'm on record as saying I think that's a mistake, regardless of what the team's record is. I think he's a good coach, but you know, where do you think they're going? Do you think they can turn this thing around, or do you think it's looking like 2-14, 3-13, just a total disaster?
Well, I think their major issues are obviously on offense. Worst passing offense in the league so far, really having trouble. I mean, last week, 151 yards of offense in a game, just an atrocity. Despite the losses, I don't think their defense has played that bad. And, you know, you can see that they've given up some points in some games, but they're always on the field. I still think they have a pretty solid defense, especially the front seven, which is something you can build on. Yeah, you say the secondary's a little weak, but they kind of cover it with their front seven. I think if you look at the scores, you say they're a bad defensive team, but any defense that's just constantly being trotted back on the field and put in bad field position by a lot of bad turnovers and stuff. So, you know, I guess if you have a defense, you've got something to start with. Can they straighten the offense out a little bit? I don't know. I think they, you know, their best bet is to go to a lot of ground and pound and try and control the ball a little and let Geno throw play action, maybe run some lead option, do something that's good for him. I don't know. You know, the two things they have going for them, as bad as they've been, is their defense and the guy that says he's coaching for his job, because I think he's an excellent coach. First thing he said in the press conference after that game, took the heat right off his team. It was all my fault. I got thoroughly out-coached. You can hang this one on me. That's just typical Rex, trying to take the attention away from his players when they don't really need the attention. He certainly believes in Geno. I mean, he wants to stay with him. You got to hope that the guy turns around. I mean, this week is got ugly written all over it. You know, I say their defense has been good, but my God, if there's anybody that can exploit the weaknesses in the secondary, it's Manning and those receivers. So. It could get really, really, really ugly this week. And then hopefully after that they can start. Then they get a Thursday night against the Patriots. Yeah. And I think it's going to be hard for them to win more than 4 games or so this year. The best they can hope to do is find positives, try to get the offense functioning a little better, try to get Geno feeling a little more comfortable, working play action off the running game, maybe, like I said, playing to his strength a little and running some read option, lean on that defense and try to be competitive the rest of the year. I really think that's the best they can hope for. And as much as Rex saying that, if they fire him, they're out of their minds. That would be just a huge mistake. That certainly isn't their problem.
I think he's gone. I'm with you in that. I don't see them turning it around and going 8-8, you know, and I think that's what he needs to do to keep his job, as sad as that is. And, you know, if Bill ever were to decide to hang him up when Tom did, we'd be happy to have you in New England, Rex. We have a great history of taking coaches from the Jets and having positive things happen afterwards. So, we would love that. And I think for the Jets, I think Your statement last week about the Patriots rings true here. If they can keep this game within 10 points, that's a victory for them. It's a victory for them. They tend to play Peyton pretty tough. If you look back at the history, I don't know if they can get enough done offensively to do that. It is in New York, but that'll give them something to build on. But it's you know, again, the margin's just so small. So small. I mean, that game against the game where they had the ball at the end and Geno couldn't get the winning touchdown or the tying touchdown. I mean, it's just so, you know, they win that game and That was against the Bears, correct? And
that was the Chicago game.
Yeah. It's just such a fine line in the NFL. But what I don't think – I'm with Rex, and I don't think Vic's the answer. I mean, particularly – I mean, he doesn't look – I mean, last year, be honest about it, when he was in a perfect situation in Chip Kelly's offense, and he didn't play that great. And what you saw on Sunday, I mean, he doesn't really look like Michael Vick, the electric Michael Vick that we all remember. He's a little old, you know, kind of an older guy. He's still fast. He's still inaccurate. But, I mean, when he comes in, he just takes tons of hits. Like, that's the one thing that sits in my mind when Vic's in the game, is that he's just going to get dropped left and right. What do you think, Keith? You agree with that? You think they should stick with Geno or go with Vic?
They need to stick with Geno. Michael Vick is done. He's washed up. He doesn't even look like he wants to be in the game. You know, didn't he make some comments earlier, like he wasn't competing for the starting quarterback job? It was like in the preseason. You know, he's just content with collecting his check and being a backup. I think that's the only reason he's there, is for the money. That's their number one problem, is their quarterback. They don't have one. Their receiving core is pretty weak. I mean, it'll get a boost when Decker comes back. I mean, that hurt them the past couple games, not having their number one receiver.
Yeah, without him, it's very weak. Without him, it's very weak.
It's terrible. Jeremy Gurley, I mean, kidding me? He's not a number one receiver.
It's worse than the Patriots' receiving core when they don't have...
Oh, yeah, running. Terrible. Yeah, absolutely. But I do like the running game. Chris Ivory's a hell of a back. And, you know, when you're mixing in Chris Johnson with him, I mean, that's what they need to do, is pound the ball 30 times a game.
Right.
At least 30 times. And then, like you said, throw a little play action here, play action there. The big problem for them, they're 1-4 now, and they got Denver and New England within a 5-day span. They're going to be 1-6, that is for sure. They, like you said, a moral victory if they can keep it within 10. Yeah, they'd be lucky if they did that. I think Denver's going to put a pounding on them. And Rex, as far as Rex goes, I agree with you. They'd be crazy to get rid of him. Until they get him a quarterback, and then he still struggles, then you fire him. But you can't put it on him. I mean, they went 8-8 last year. They had a terrible team.
They had a 2-14 roster that he took to 8-8.
Yeah, and they had 8-8. I mean, you know, so you can't blame this on Rex. I mean, maybe he's lost the locker room, but I doubt it. I mean, if everybody you hear speak about Rex, they love to play for him. So, yeah, I just think that they're... Until they get a real quarterback, they're in trouble.
Agreed. All right, so Keith, you're thinking Broncos in a landslide, then. That's what it sounds.
Oh, yeah.
This
game will be over by halftime.
Right, and I'll predict that the Jets lose by exactly 10. I think they will keep it at 10 on their home field. But the great segment, guys. We're gonna go to break quick here. Senior's been signaling me that he's got to use the bathroom for the last 20 minutes, so can't have that. great segment. And if you're into wrestling, if you're into pop culture, if you like other sports podcasts, we have all that stuff here at placetobenation.com. And on the break, we'll go over each of those different shows with you. So please don't just tune into the Sports Lounge. Tune into the other stuff. It's really good stuff. And we'll be back shortly to break down some more of the NFL for you. So Cowboy out, but just for a second. Sin still plays and preaches, but to have an empty core. And the signs are passing. Grab the wheel, can't read it. Sacrifice to see better smell. It's on my hands. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling, we talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. And a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richer and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
We'll be right back.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Hope you enjoyed the break. Senior has drained his bladder, and he looks fiery. He looks like he's ready to give us the takes that we've come to know and love. You with us, Senior?
I'm always with you.
All right. So, great first segment, and let's just continue with the NFL here. Team I wanted to talk about, Pittsburgh Steelers. Coming off a win in Jacksonville, against Jacksonville. Maybe not the most impressive win, but as they say in the NFL, a win is a win. The Steelers are sitting at 3-2, probably right where they want to be. You know, they haven't played the best. I don't think they've played up to their capabilities yet. Sitting at 3-2, and they have a winnable game in Cleveland this week. Senior, what do you think of Pittsburgh's performance against the Jags?
Just another ho-hum, lousy game by the Steelers where they show up and don't really play. You said the Eagles were the most unimpressive 4-1 you've ever seen. The Steelers have got to be the worst 3-2 team in the history of football. They're somehow 3-2 with one good game. The only game that they played impressive football was the Carolina game. Every other game has been crap by them. They blew the big lead again at home against the Browns their first week. They got thumped by Baltimore the second week. The third week, they had a good game, Carolina. Then they had the ugly loss to Tampa Bay. Now they play Jacksonville, who really does look like the team that's going to go 0-16. And Jacksonville is in that game from start to right at the end when Bryce McCain gets a pick six on Blake Bortles. Other than that, the Jags played even the whole game. I mean, is there any excuse for this? Does this team ever show character and just say we're gonna be all business? We're gonna come down and play? No, they're always the freaking Steelers. I'm not impressed by this win. Obviously, you leave the Jags in the game and barely pull it out. Nobody's gonna tell me that's an impressive win. And I look at their upcoming schedule, and you want to talk about at Cleveland. There's no way they're going into Cleveland. That is a team that's fired up, that has something the Steelers don't have, character. The Cardiac kids over there in Cleveland, at Cleveland, aren't going to let the team take a big lead on them like they've been doing, and they can still have the character to win. They're just going to take it to the Steelers. And then after that, the Steelers come home for 3 in a row, Houston, Indy, and Baltimore. And when they get to that Baltimore game, when they're on riding a 3-game losing streak, going on 4 and 3 in a row at home, it's probably going to get real ugly in Pittsburgh, and they're going to get treated like they deserve to be treated by their home fans. This is a bad team with no character. I don't care what their record is.
All right, so Senior, you're going. You think the Browns are going to squeak one out this week? Is what you're saying?
They're not going to have to do what they did last week, which was really incredible. This team just, as bad as they look at the beginning, they don't have a bit of quit in them. You give them a little opening, and you're not hearing any calls for Manziel over there the way Brian Hoyer's playing. I mean, that was the third biggest comeback in regular season football history. At the beginning of the game, the Titans receivers were just getting wide open deep time and time again, and they walked out to that big lead, and all of a sudden Cleveland just, number one, to make a comeback like that, 20 down 28-3, you know, you think it's all offense, which it is. Hoyer and the offense were unbelievable. He spread the ball around to all the different receivers, and it was just a joy to watch Benjamin making some great catches, but also your defense has to straighten out. I mean, Your offense can do all you want. When you're down 28-3, if the defense keeps giving up points, you're going to lose. Their defense just buckled right down and then did the job. They caught a couple of breaks where there was a punt that Benjamin fumbled that got turned over because of a penalty, and there was another a big interception that got turned back over because of a penalty. So they caught a couple of little bit of an illegal contact on that one. The punt was a guy had ran out of bounds and didn't make the immediate attempt to get back in bounds, which really didn't contribute to Benjamin fumbling it because he just dropped it. He just muffed it. So they caught a couple of breaks, but maybe you need to be a little bit lucky to make that kind of a comeback. But they certainly had the heart of the lion. Brian Hoyer's playing absolutely fabulous football. You're not going to hear, like I said, you know, you think you're set for a quarterback controversy when you got a guy with the high profile of Johnny Football on your bench. But the way Hoyer's playing, nobody's calling for Johnny. What they did to the Steelers in Pittsburgh, making that comeback from way behind, I say, and this week making a comeback, I say, they learn a lesson from it. They come out right from the start of the game and not let Pittsburgh get the edge on them. They're going to be home, and they're just going to steamroll them. I see this being not only a win for Cleveland, a big win, a blowout win for the Browns.
All right. Strong statement, Senior. So, you know, the Steelers, what I was unimpressed with, I thought their offense would, you know, so looking at it objectively, Jacksonville's got the worst defense in the NFL, and I thought the Steelers' offense would come out and throw up a bunch of points on them, and they really kind of played down to the level of their competition in that game. You know, it was really, really weird because, I mean, their offense has been playing pretty well, and, you know, Brown didn't get going. Bell had a decent game, but it was just, it was strange, kind of a strange scenario that they were unable to light up that horrible Jaguars defense. What do you think of that one, Keith?
Well, I kind of agree with what Senior was saying. That was a terrible performance. Like you just said, they should have put 30 points on Jacksonville easily. They didn't have a 100-yard rusher. They didn't have a 100-yard receiver. Everyone that's played Jacksonville has lit them up offensively. And they got lucky. They scored 10 points on offense. Without that pick six, I think Jacksonville might have beat them. They're going to finish in last place in that division. I think Cleveland's a better team. I really do. I don't know about Cleveland blowing Pittsburgh out this week, but I like Cleveland to take it to win this game.
Nice to see you guys starting to come around on the Steelers.
I'm gonna go the other way on this one, just based on kind of recent history. Antonio Brown really owns the Browns, like really, really owns the Browns and owns Hayden. I think the Steelers are going to win this one. I think their offense bounces back, and the Cleveland offense, while they played good, I mean Tennessee is just a dumpster fire right now, which we didn't mention. The fact that they would fall behind 28-3 to that god awful Tennessee team, and it with Charlie Whitehurst playing quarterback, I don't think speaks too well of the Browns, and I think they're going to have a lot of problems stopping Pittsburgh, and they don't have the firepower on their own offense to keep up. That's just my thought. So I see a pretty high scoring game, but Pittsburgh, you know, winning a 27-20, 31-24, something along those lines. So. As is the case sometimes, I'm on an island with the Steelers. We'll see.
Oh, boy, I think this is an island you're going to wish you didn't visit. I think Gilligan has a better chance of getting rescued than you do from getting rescued from this island.
Wow. Oh, I mean, they're still the – I mean, I was as high on the Browns as anyone coming into the year, but, I mean, they're still the Browns.
Things are changing in Cleveland.
Steelers are the Steelers. Yeah, I like the Browns. I think the Browns are fiery. They're going to be fired up for this game. Yeah, I'm telling you, they're coming right out, and they're just going to bump them. This is going to be a continuation of the comeback against Tennessee and the second half at Heinz Field when they played the Steelers. just going to be like you're going to roll it over for four more quarters.
Very, and Joe Hayden's iffy to play, too, which might actually work in Cleveland's favor, given how poorly he's matched up with Brown. But, you know, we'll go very quickly on this one. But the Toilet Bowl game of the week, Jacksonville at Tennessee. Jacksonville with a real legitimate chance to get their first win of the season here. Tennessee, you know, I predicted, when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And, you know, part of prognosticating is being able to stand up and say when you're wrong. And I picked this team to make the playoffs, and I could not have been more wrong. We were saying Jake Locker stays healthy. They're a decent team. Well, he's not. He has been bad. And, I mean, Whitehurst outplayed him last week, but he's obviously not the answer. We know what he is. So there's a real legit possibility that Zach Mettenberger gets some snaps in this game. And I think this could be one of those games that's high scoring, not because of the high quality offense, but just because neither team plays any defense at all. And, you know, I'll go with Tennessee just because they're home, but I would not be surprised in the least if Jacksonville won this game. What do you think, Keith?
Well, there isn't going to be too many opportunities for Jacksonville to get any wins this year, and I think this is probably their best opportunity. Like you just said, Locker's definitely not playing. And Whitehurst, I don't think he's the answer either, so this could be Jacksonville's first win. Might be their first and only win of the year, but I'm taking Jacksonville in this game.
All right. I like you, Keith.
I think Tennessee's a mess. They're a mess.
Yeah, just brutal. I mean, and, you know, to lose when you're ahead 28-3 on Cleveland is a real indictment on your team. It's not like they jumped out on the Broncos and Peyton went crazy on them.
Right.
What do you think, Senior, about the Jags-Titans?
You know, as much as you're calling that a bad thing, you know, having Cleveland come back on you like that at home, ask the Steelers how that can happen to you. I've had before. As far as this game goes, you know, I see two bad defenses. I'm going to give Tennessee the edge, number one, a little bit better offense. They've been able to muster a little bit more points. There's some signs they've been able to run the ball a little bit. And number two, home field. So I'm gonna go with Tennessee, and I'm gonna say that Jacksonville's best shot at a win, if you look at their schedule, is week 16, which is a big prime time Thursday matchup. You get this rematch when Tennessee goes to Jacksonville. That might be their best shot at a win. I don't see them winning this one.
All right. So moving
I'll stand
on.
On the island.
Moving on, it's because we all kind of held our nose when we made those picks. It's tough to pick either one of those teams to win, but Green Bay.
You know that Thursday, December 18th. You might want to circle that on the calendar for a tractor pull night.
That is a tractor
pull. Maybe the
Tennessee
dog show.
Jacksonville in a primetime game. Only game on. Maybe go do some Christmas shopping.
That could be the tractor pull game of the year, Cowboy Senior. I like how you're thinking. But Green Bay, with a thumping, just an absolute destruction of Minnesota, and it was Minnesota without Teddy Bridgewater. Christian Ponder might be the worst guy to get behind a center in the NFL this year, but good to see the Packers starting to put it together. Lacy finally had a good game. Those receivers, Rodgers, the offense really seems to be clicking. The defense, again, I mean, the defense played good in that game. I still don't think it's a good defense, but they did what they were supposed to do against maybe the 70th best quarterback in the league. But real interesting game and a big one for the AFC East with the Packers going to Miami. Miami coming off the bye and at home, which, you know, a lot of, I mean, you know, so was Cincinnati, but This is. I think this one could go either way. I mean, Senior, why don't you break this one down for us?
Sure. I mean, Miami coming off the bye, generally a pretty big advantage coming off a bye, but Green Bay coming off a Thursday night. So they've had extra time to prepare also. So that kind of evens that out. I don't like Miami. So I think Green Bay's starting to get it going. I think they're gonna score points on them. Green Bay's the biggest Achilles heel is you can run on them, and I don't think Miami has a great running game. You know, they had that one good rushing game against the Patriots the first week of the season, but I don't see their rushing attack being that devastating. I honestly see this being a comfortable win for Green Bay. I'm going to say 31-10 Packers.
Wow, I disagree, Senior. But one about their rushing it. So, I mean, Lamar Miller's averaging 5.7 yards a carry, I believe, this year. And Moreno's coming back for this game. I like the Packers in this one, but I don't feel good about it at all. The Packers... deficiencies are run defense and then protecting Rodgers, and I feel like that plays right into Miami's two biggest strengths. They have a good pass rush, and their running game, I mean, maybe the names aren't what you think aren't the best names in the league, but their running game has been extremely effective this year. So I think it's a big, they're gonna have to establish Lacy to keep the rush off of Rodgers. If Lacy reverts back to the T-Rich 2.0 that he looked like the first few weeks of the season and can't run the ball, then I think the Dolphins will win. I see it being 3 points either way. I'm going to go with the Packers, but like I said, I don't feel good about it. What do you think, Keith?
I like the Packers to win this game too. I'm not going to go as far as 31-10, but I think it'll be more than 3 points. The key for Miami would be to keep the game close so they can run the ball. If Green Bay jumps out to a lead, I think Miami's screwed because Green Bay will just chuck it all over the place and light the scoreboard up. But if they can keep the game close or even jump out to a little lead on Green Bay, they got a decent shot at keeping it close. I agree with you. Lamar Miller and Moreno's coming back this week, so their running game has been pretty good so far this year. Tannehill cannot turn the ball over. If you give Aaron Rodgers extra chances, and again, he'll light that scoreboard right up. I think Green Bay is going to start rolling. That offense is pretty good. So Miami's got their hands full. Coming off a bye, I don't know, some teams do well coming off a bye, others don't. I don't know where Miami fits in that, but we'll find out this week.
All right, and the pinball machine game of the week. Two teams coming off tough losses. Chicago coming off the loss that we spoke about to Carolina. Bad loss. Bad, bad loss with the lead they jumped out to. And the Falcons coming off the road loss to the Giants. Games in Atlanta. I don't see a scenario where both these teams aren't in the 30s. It's just a perfect storm of perfect conditions. You know, it's going to be just a track meet. Neither one of these teams can stop anybody, and they both have good offenses. Atlanta, particularly at home, Matty Ice at home. It's very similar to the Breeze phenomenon at home. But the Bears have shown they can go on the road and score points. They'll give up points, but they've proven they can go on the road and score points. But Senior, what do you think of the Bears? I mean, what do you think of that game last week against Carolina? Just what, from a Bears perspective?
Yeah, I mean, you got to be very disappointed if you're a Bears fan, obviously. The way they jumped out, played just so well in the first half, even though the one thing that would have scared me as a Bears fan when you went to halftime was, you know, we completely dominated the game and we totally outplayed them and we're not ahead by enough. You know, I believe they were only ahead by a touchdown at halftime, which felt like they should have been ahead by more. And then they just totally laid an egg in the second half. Their offensive line really didn't play well. They're overpowered by that. They made the Carolina defense look like the Carolina D. You know, I don't know if switch was flipped and somehow that D showed up, or ineptitude by the Bears. They also gave up 31 points to Carolina, but we know the Bears aren't a great defensive team. So I would say this was a big disappointment. And right now they're a team that's saying, we got to turn this around. You know, we're 2-3. We're supposed to be better than this. We got thumped by Green Bay the week before that. I think even though it's at Atlanta, I think Atlanta is a team that's kind of ripe for the picking. I think the Bears offense should have tons of success against Atlanta. And in a shootout, I think what might cause Atlanta not be able to keep up is the fact that their offensive line is pretty dinged up right now. And maybe the Bears can get some pressure on Matty Ice. And I'm not saying stop them, but slow them down enough to where you get a few stops as opposed to your defense hardly getting any stops. And the Bears in a high-scoring game. I see the Bears by a touchdown or so in a high-scoring game because of that. And it's not something that I put my house on or anything, but that's the way I see it.
Yeah, I'm in disagreement there. I think Atlanta's a good team at home. If it was in Chicago, I would pick Chicago for sure. But Atlanta at home, I think you can say the same thing about the Falcons that you just said about the Bears, about the 2-3, and they think they're better than that. I mean, they've been really lights out at home this year with the win over New Orleans the first game of the season, and then that's the thumping of Tampa. I mean, I see a double-digit Falcons win. I just think I don't think the Bears have the personnel to put the pressure to take advantage of the offensive line being dinged up. I mean, it's a battle of bad defenses, and I think Chicago's defense is worse than Atlanta's, and Atlanta's home.
You know, that is an indictment on the Chicago defense. I kind of agree where it could go either way. I'm just swaying toward Chicago because of Atlanta's had offensive linemen dropping like flies recently. So I'm going to stick by that, Chicago in a close game.
All right. And Keith.
Point to the opening day win against New Orleans as being a real impressive home win. Yeah, what we've seen from New Orleans so far, maybe that win wasn't that impressive.
Agreed. Oh. Agreed. I mean, I still think it's a good win. I mean, and they played, and Ryan threw for over 500 yards in that game, right? Or 490 or something ridiculous like that.
There's another defense that can make you look like that. Yeah, that's true.
But, Keith, how do you see this one playing out?
I don't think the punters need to dress this week. I'm going to put the over-under punts at 4. I think you might see both of these quarterbacks throw for 400-plus yards. I think the key to this game is going to be turnovers. That's it. Whoever turns the ball over is going to lose. Like I said, I don't think either team can stop each other. They both have dynamic receiver calls, and you're going to see it all on display.
So,
whoever has the ball last wins.
In that battle, I want Matt Ryan and not Jay Cutler if the pick is going to lose me the game. That's just what I'm saying.
I agree. Right.
You're on an island, senior.
All right. Happy to be there.
So purposely saved this game for the second segment. What I think is the game of the week this week that I'd like to spend a good amount of time on. Dallas Cowboys going to Seattle. Cowboys, I picked them to win the division. If you would have told me they're 4-1 and they're only tied for first place in that division, I would have told you were crazy. I would have thought they had a 3-game lead at the beginning of the year. But Cowboys are playing good football right now. But they have the toughest assignment that you can draw in the NFL, which is to go into the toughest place to play in the NFL and take on the Seahawks. One thing working in Dallas's favor is the Seahawks are coming off a Monday night game, and not a Monday night game that was a blowout that they got to rest people. I mean, it was a game where Wilson took a lot of hits. Game came right down to the end, so they can hang their hat on that. I think, given what the Seahawks defense has taken a little bit of a step back this year too, and I know that they're better in Seattle, but. My take on this game is I think Seattle I think Seattle should win the game. Right, it's tough to not pick Seattle to win the game, but I give the Cowboys a real chance. What can't happen and what tends to happen is Romo can't turn it over under the bright lights, which he has a real tendency to do in these, you know, these type of hornet's nest environments, and you know, an early pick, and this thing could turn into a blowout. But if that doesn't happen, I think the Cowboys are going to be able to move the ball on Seattle, both through the air and on the ground. And I see it playing out similarly to Seattle-Denver, where Seattle's offense, that the problem for the Cowboys is I don't think they're going to be able to stop Seattle's offense. And I see Seattle controlling the clock in a big way, pounding Marshawn, the short passing game, maybe giving it to Harvin. But I see it as a close game, and I would not be shocked if the Cowboys won this game. But I'm going to go with Seattle. But what do you guys, either one of you, what do you make of this Cowboys 4-1? Do you think they're for real? Do you think the defense not being as bad as maybe everybody thought? I mean, they've won four games in a row. What do you think about the Cowboys?
The Cowboys have been good where it matters most, in the trenches. You know, we knew it on offense. When we talked about them in the preseason, the young offensive line, I called it the best offensive line in the NFL. Just a great offensive line, and they've been phenomenal. You know, which is like DeMarco Murray having this just incredible year, obviously running behind that offensive line. And the defensive front seven has played very, very well. And that's the big surprise. And you know, if they can sustain that, they are a good team. I think right now, and I would have thought Philly at the beginning of the season, but I think right now they're the best team in that division. So I'm giving the Cowboys credit. Yes, I think they're for real. That being said, that doesn't mean you pick them to win this game in Seattle. You know, that's just such a tall order. The most interesting battle is going to be the battle in the trenches when the Cowboys have the ball with what we call the best offensive line in football going against that legion of boom up front, who have allowed the least opposing rushing yards of any team in football. They're only giving up 62 yards a game on the ground. If the Cowboys can run on them, if their offensive line wins that battle and they're able to run, I give them a real chance, because then Romo becomes a lot more effective. If Seattle can just stuff the Cowboy run, which has been so good, which everything is playing off of this year, and make them one-dimensional, then I see Romo throwing multiple picks in the game, kind of really turning Seattle's way. On the other side, after watching the Seahawks-Skins game the other night, where basically the biggest problem the Seahawks had was penalties that really kept the Skins in the game, especially kind of started to feel bad for Percy Harvin, and every time he made a great play, touchdowns, they were all getting called back. But even though that wasn't a positive game for the Seahawks in a lot of ways, the one thing that I walked away from in that game, kept saying to myself when I was watching it, when you think of the Seahawks, what do you think of? You think of the defense, the Legion of Boom. You think of Marshawn pounding the ball like ground offense. And you really don't give that guy, the controls a whole lot of thought. When you talk about the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, nobody says Russell Wilson. Man, he played an unbelievable game. He runs that read option better than anybody I've ever seen. The guy's running like a lot, like way more than you want a quarterback to run in the NFL, because you say you can't survive, you're going to get hurt. But he doesn't get hit. He always slides at the right time. He's so quick, he gets out of bounds before he gets hit. He makes great reads throwing the ball. He's so intelligent. I think he's very underrated. He's, to me, right now, Russell Wilson is an elite quarterback. Even though he's different than the other elite quarterbacks in the way he does it, he's an elite quarterback. And you get them on their home field, as good as Dallas is playing, I don't see the Seahawks losing. I don't see the Seahawks losing games at home this year, so... That's before my take on the Cowboys. Yes, they're for real. They're probably going to come out of this game with their second loss, and that's not going to change how I feel about them. I still think they're for real. I just think that that's an impossible place to go and try and win.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Wilson, the crazy thing with Wilson, I said he took a lot of hits, but he broke the Monday Night Football quarterback rushing record. He ran for like 120-something yards, and he took a lot of hits, but they weren't when he was running. He tends to take some hits in the pocket. he's willing to stand in there and take hits in the pocket, and he did. And Washington, say what you want about him, they do have a good pass rush. Kerrigan is a beast, but yeah, the kid is. I mean, he's basically everything that it's funny that he did that against Washington, because he's everything that they would. You know, if he's a best case scenario for what RG3 would have been, and he does. He does all the stuff right that RG3 does wrong. and that's been a narrative that you're hearing nationally now. And particularly, Keith, I'm sure you saw the stat of Wilson's record. It was against, Brady, Manning, and Rodgers, right? He's like 11-1 or something.
Yep. Dominated.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying what Cowboy Senior is saying, that he is truly one of the elite quarterbacks, and I'll buy that. So I think there's a little difference. I think if you put him on a team with just no running game, I think you could put Drew Brees, for example, on any team in the NFL, and he's going to be successful. Whereas if you were to put Wilson on a team, say you throw Wilson on, Carolina, who can't run the ball at all. I think a lot of what he does is predicated on the fear that Lynch puts into the defense. Not to say he's not going to develop beyond this, because he's still just a kid. But I think that's the one caveat. What do you think, Keith?
Russell Wilson, I think he's. You might have to put him in the top five quarterbacks right now in the league. I love the way that kid plays. Boys, he doesn't make many mistakes. So that's that. But this matchup, I can't wait to watch this game. I can't wait to see Dez Bryant line up across from Richard Sherman. And as far as the Cowboys running the ball, I think they'll have success running it. The only problem is DeMarco Murray has, four fumbles already this year?
Yes.
And that's what the Seahawks do best, strip the ball. So, you might see him fumble twice this game. Because they're going to, they stand you up and the other guys come in and just rake at the ball. And he's having a hard time holding on to it. So I don't think that's going to change this week. I'm hoping Dez Bryant lines up with Sherman, and they don't. Case Sherman doesn't leave that one side of the field, so I want to see that battle right there. But I think the Seahawks win this game easily, 10-point win.
All right, and I mean, it's a good point about Murray, but the Cowboy Senior was saying that, if the Cowboys can run the ball, I think that offensive line with him at tailback, like you said, Keith, I don't care who's on the other side. I think they can run on anybody. I think it's just one of those teams, and it's one of those running games, and you see it sometimes where it just comes together and they can run on anybody, but he does have to hold on to the ball. And I mean, he's been fantastic this year. And I really talked a little about this last week, but they're leaning on him so much so early in the season. Yeah. Like, he's on pace to break break Larry Johnson's single season carry record right now. And that has to change. And they've addressed that this week in the media, saying, yeah, we're going to scale it back a bit. I mean, they have to. The guy's got a very checkered injury history. You don't want any running back on your team that you care about, that you want to be decent after this year, to have that heavy of a workload. And, I mean, DeMarco Murray in particular. I mean, just to give you an idea, I mean, Marshawn, I mean, if you watch Seattle, it doesn't seem like Marshawn Lynch is not getting the ball, right? He gets the ball a lot. So he's got 69 carries. And Murray's got 130.
Yeah.
And granted, the Cowboys have played one more game But I mean, it's just such a huge disparity there. They have to scale it back a little bit. And I don't think the Cowboys will change their offense. I don't think they'll do what the Packers did week one and just line Dez up against Byron Maxwell the whole game. I think they're stubborn. I think they believe in that offense, and they believe in him one-on-one against anybody. I don't care. I don't care if it's Richard Sherman. I think you will get your wish and you will see that matchup. And frankly, Sherman has not been, hasn't been quite what we've seen from him in years past. I mean, DeSean Jackson lit him up pretty good.
Yeah, he did.
On Monday night, and I mean, Sherman's a gambler, right? That's what he is at his core. He's a gambler. He's Revis. He's not Revis. I think the two of them is not really fair to either one of them. Revis and Joe Hayden are more of a lot alike, where they just blanket you. Sherman is a ball hawk, and if you look at the play, like where Jackson beat him for the long touchdown, it's because he cheated inside on the tight end. looking to intercept the seam route, and they just went over the top of him. So
yeah.
It's going to be a great game. And
I'll tell you, I would pay money to hear those two on the field mic'd up. I would pay pay-per-view to see that.
I mean, especially, I mean, did you see Garcon drag him down by his hair? And then the rest of the game, they were just going at it.
Oh, man.
But
bring your popcorn for that one, that's for sure. I can't wait.
But I mean, I think this is two playoff teams, in my opinion. I mean, Seattle, I think it's a foregone conclusion, but Dallas has really, really impressed me this year. I picked them to win the division, and they're playing better than I thought they would. And for senior, I think you're right there. I mean, I think at least the way they've played, I mean, I think they're clearly right now the best team in that division, even if Philly's has the same record. So we'll see. So I mean, it would be pretty neat if the Cowboys won. I don't think it's going to happen, but it'd be pretty neat if the Cowboys won too. You know, that would be the ultimate shut everybody up game from Tony Romo, right?
Yeah.
To go into Seattle and take them.
It'd be even better if it was on a nice seam route to Dez Bryant right on Richard Sherman's side.
Right.
Game-winning touchdown.
But, you know, the way Tony's career's gone, he'll win this game and then go in the throw five picks against them in the playoffs in Dallas.
Go ahead, Keith. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
I've just been waiting. I waited a while, and the subject kind of went away, but I want to back up a little on the comment Cowboy made about Russell Wilson being somewhat, his game being somewhat dependent on the team having a running game. Well, it kind of works both ways, because I think you put him on a team and you're going to have a better running game, because the defense has to be so cognizant of containing him that it opens running lane. It helps to open a defense up for a guy to run inside. So no matter what team you put him on, their running game will automatically get better just by having him there. I think he's the best blend of athleticism and high football IQ that I've ever seen.
Sure.
A very athletic quarterback with a super high football IQ. That's Russell Wilson. And sky's the limit. He's going to get as he gets more experience. I mean, he's just an amazing player.
No, it's a fair point, senior. I think top five. So you want to say top five, right? I mean, if you're starting a franchise.
Yeah,
and not thinking about the future. If you're thinking you can have one guy for one game, right, or one guy for a season, I think, you know, Manning, Rodgers, Breeze, Andrew Luck. I think that has to be your top four. I right now, that's just my opinion. I think it's very difficult to argue for anyone else in there.
Yeah.
And so it brings up the interesting point. If you've right now, would you rather have Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, or Philip Rivers? Because I think they're pretty clearly the next three.
I think, you know, when you're lining them up, where you said Russell is somewhat going to be a better fit for a team with the running game, those other guys are going to be a better fit for a team with great receivers, great outside receivers. Like, so it kind of depends who my team is. In all honesty, right, if my team is the roster's constituted like the Seattle Seahawks roster is, I would take Russell Wilson over any of them. I think he's perfect for that system. Yeah. Obviously, I don't think he could do what Peyton Manning does in Denver. It would be completely different, you know. So, yeah, maybe some of it is fit. But guess what? If you got any one of those guys that you just mentioned, you should try to, you know, put the correct team around them. The kind of thing you say the Patriots haven't done for Tom Brady. You should, if you got a guy with that much greatness, then you should be able to mold your team to fit that guy's skill set. He's a different skill set than those guys, so it's almost like apples and oranges. But, okay, if I've got the Seattle Seahawks, the team that he's on now, there's nobody else who would be as good a quarterback as he is for them.
Yeah. Yeah, the mix, the blend with Wilson, Lynch, and Percy Harvin, that's deadly.
Yeah,
deadly.
Yeah, it just really works. You know, the whole thing just works.
They throw Percy in motion. He comes across as if he's going to run the jet sweep. They snap the ball. The linebackers are looking like, which side do we cover? You know, Percy's going left, Russell's going right, and Marshawn Lynch has got the ball going straight up the middle. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
And Russell's going to read whatever the defense does. You know, he's just so damn intelligent.
Can you go back to that top five
question and answer. Yeah.
Very tough. So. I
would put Russell Wilson in and take Drew Brees out of the top five.
Wow.
That's just my opinion.
Top four. Would you put Wilson above Brady? It's okay to say
it. That's kind of hard. That hurts me to say, but if I had one game to win, no. I'm taking Tom Brady over all of them. One game to win. Now, if you're talking career, you know, moving forward, obviously Russell Wilson's a lot younger. It either have to be him or Luck. So, but right now, I think he's if he's not in the top five yet, he will be.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point. I think it's just a good fun conversation to have. So for me, my money, if I could have one quarterback right now, it's Aaron Rodgers. And for me, it's not that close because I think he blends a little bit of what all these guys do. If you see some of the plays that he makes plays that nobody else can make. Like that, the play where he got called back for holding, but he threw a touchdown pass to Davante Adams, where literally the guy's wrapped around. He's got a defensive lineman wrapped around his ankles, and on his way down. He throws it 30 yards and throws Adams open. I mean, it's an incredible play. So for me, I would go Rodgers, and then I would go Luck. I think Luck's taken a huge step up this year. I watch him play, and I think he's greatness. He runs. He's a very athletic quarterback too, and I think he's just gonna probably get a little bit of a better arm. And I think like a Manning in his prime that and very much like Brady has done his whole career, he's a guy who makes those weapons around him look even better than they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
After that it's tough for me, you know, because I think Manning, Breeze, Wilson, Brady, I think, you know, like I they're all four of them are, you know, they kind of system, like you're saying, the system would dictate that. Like, you certainly wouldn't want Peyton Manning running the read option, obviously, you know.
Right.
But I just think as far as pure quarterback, those guys stand up a little bit more for me, just a hair more.
Well, what's pretty neat now is with all the great ones that we've had for quite a few years, all of a sudden now we've got these two new guys, Luck and Wilson.
Yep. Wilson and Luck, yeah.
We're talking about them. They're in the conversation. It's quite a compliment because the other guys that we're naming are going to go down in history as some of the greatest quarterbacks ever to play the game. So it's a huge compliment to Russell Wilson and Andrew Luck that us and everybody else is putting them in that class now, the way you have to consider them.
Yeah, and
the way we talk about the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady comparison, that's always the big one. 15 years from now, that's what we'll be talking about. Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck.
I think you hit it right on the head there, Keith.
Yeah, very good chance of it. And a guy I mentioned there that, you know, I mean, he who's playing, he might be playing better than all of them right now, is Philip Rivers. Guy, I mean, kind of, I don't want to say left for dead a couple years ago, but, I mean, really, really hit a rock bottom in his career and had a comeback year last year. But, I mean, he's playing great. He is playing great football right now, and that team is playing great football right now. And they're very capable. They're right up there with Denver, New England, Cincinnati. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they came out of the AFC. And they have a cakewalk this week in Oakland. I don't think we need to break that one down.
but, enough said, right there, Oakland.
Senior, what do you think of the Chargers?
Yeah, they're not only 4-1. They're an extremely impressive 4-1. You know, they put it to the teams that they're supposed to put it to. They beat Seattle. You know, they had that tough opening day loss to Arizona, and since then they're just steamrolling people. Their defense is playing head and shoulders better than anybody would have thought. Even though we gave them props before the season, we said this could be a year for the Chargers. I think we were basing it a lot more on their offense. The defense has been absolutely stellar. You can't throw on them. It's real hard to run on them. They turn the ball over. They've turned into a great defense. And the offense, led by Rivers with his passing game, where he kind of flies under the radar when you talk about great quarterbacks. I agree. He spreads the ball around. He's a fiery leader. He's got those intangibles that you want from your quarterback that kind of makes a lot of people. He's got it so much that, you know, some people, if you're playing against him, you don't like him, you know, but if he's your guy, you love him. He's outstanding. And then, yeah, they're a really good team. And, you know, like I said, we gave him credit in the preseason. And I can remember, you know, he's not here tonight, but if Andy were here, I clearly remember him in his preseason saying, this is going to be a big year for Philip Rivers and the Chargers. And he really thought Rivers had it set up for him this year to have a big year. And is he ever? You know, you see the guys who was throwing, too. You don't talk about an ageless wonder. How about, you know, when you talk about the Chargers, what a year Antonio Gates is having. Is this guy ever going to go away?
He's healthy.
You keep thinking, okay, that's the end of Antonio Gates. And he's been making some great catches and big plays, and he's a killer in the red zone. I mean, they're just a really good team, fun team to watch. You look at their schedule, and you see a lot of wins in it. You know, I see them coming out of it. You could easily come out of the year 12-4 or so right now, or maybe even better. And, who knows? They could go into the playoffs with the 1 or 2 seed in the AFC. Who knows? They could be fighting Seattle for that division. No. I'm not saying it. The old days of Seattle being in the division. They could win that division. They could be Denver and beat Denver off for that division. There's no doubt about it. This is a real team. And maybe the surprise of the NFL for some people, but if you listen to the lounge, I'm not saying we picked them to do this well, but we all had them in the playoffs and as a good team. And they've kind of surprised. They're kind of like the Cowboys. They've surpassed our expectations.
Yeah, not everybody had the Cowboys in the playoffs.
Keith, but at least somebody in the lounge did.
It's true. Keith, you agree with all that? I mean,
I do. I'm really impressed with the Chargers. I mean, I thought they'd be a good team, but not this good. And you know the funny part of that? They had their weakest link so far this season has been rushing the ball. Ryan Matthews goes down. Woodhead goes down. Last week, Donald Brown gets a concussion, and they finally break 100 yards rushing against probably the top rushing defense in the league at the Jets.
No, probably about it.
That's ironic, isn't it?
Oh,
Brandon Oliver.
Yeah, he even wears Sproles' number, and he's like
5'6". I mean, he looks like Sproles.
So they, I mean, they're gonna. Sure. I mean, I see no. I don't think the Raiders have a snowball's chance in hell in this game. As bad as they've looked, and so you're probably looking at the Chargers going to 5-1, which is you know, it's right where they want to be. And if you look at Rivers' numbers, they stack up with anybody's. And I think Gates, Senior, You know, you see this sometimes where when guys play together for such a long time. I mean, he's been his guy for how many years that they're just, if you watch some of his touchdown passes to him, I mean, it's a lot of, you know, they just know each other so, so well that with what Gates has lost a little bit physically, you know, he's probably picked up mentally just from, you know, from that cohesiveness he has with Rivers.
And I heard Rivers talking about him this week, praising him for his hard work, saying, you know, he's run some routes for how many years, over and over and over again, and yet he'll be out there with Rivers in practice and stay late and work on those routes more. He just wants to keep working and keep perfecting it. And he's just an unbelievable guy. And that kind of work ethic speaks volumes. I mean, he's obviously a great teammate. He's everything you want. Antonio Gates, a guy that doesn't get talked about that much, probably not enough. Great player. And, you know, we talked about...
I'm surprised. Those two have the record, don't they? Tight end, quarterback to tight end touchdown record?
I believe so.
60-something touchdowns or something like
it's
that?
It's just because Gronk keeps coming. Getting hurt.
Yeah, well.
But
he also has, 40 more with Drew Brees, too.
Right, that's true. Yeah, one of the... I mean, the guy was a basketball player, so it's nuts. But that's...
Yeah.
There's only a...
You got the next Gates right behind him with Darius Green, who looks good. He can't get on the field because Gates is playing so well.
We'll see.
Yeah, but what a guy to learn. What a guy to sit behind and learn from, you know?
Right.
It could only work to Green's benefit.
I think the next Gates... plays over in New Orleans, Keith. But both basketball guys.
He's got a bum shoulder.
He does.
He's got a bum shoulder.
So just a couple games left here. Washington at Arizona. We didn't talk too much about Denver, Arizona. It's just one of those games for Denver. Manning lit him up. Arizona tried to hang in. Arizona's quarterback situation is becoming a real, real problem for them. It looks like Carson might play this week. If he does, I think they'll handle Washington pretty easily. If it's Logan Thomas, I think the Redskins win the game. That's the difference. Oof. I see there. The kid. They drafted him as a project, he's got all the size, athleticism, but he's not going to be a productive NFL quarterback. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. The one play he made was, I hate to say this, senior, because I know Ellington's one of your favorite guys, but it was a pretty lucky. It wasn't the world's greatest throw or anything for that 80-yard touchdown. But
was it me, or did it look like there was like a sun glare there and the linebacker couldn't see the ball?
Exactly.
They caught it behind him and took off.
Yeah. It's, that's just something that kind of happens when senior likes a guy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I got you.
I think it comes down to that. So do you guys have anything to add on that one, or should we go on to 49ers-Rams?
I got to agree with you because they kind of count on that passing game on their offense because their offense isn't designed to really pound the ball on the ground. And without a capable quarterback, they're going to be in trouble. And they give up a lot through the air. They might make Cousins look pretty good. And I'm kind of seeing Washington going in there and beating them. After all the good things we said about Arizona, because I'll be real surprised if they can win this game with Logan Thomas at quarterback. I don't see how. That'll be the coaching job of the century if they win that game.
Well, I don't think any win over Washington.
Dan's definitely out.
They said he'd play. I don't think so. I'd be surprised if Palmer plays.
Yeah, no, well, he's at least throwing now. And when it happened, he threw, I believe, 2 weeks ago, and the next day, he's got a nerve that's not flaring, and the nerve, you know, it stopped flaring again the next day, or there was a setback. So there has not been a report of a setback this time. And I mean, I would think even if he's at like 50%, they're going to throw him out there because he's better, you know. So 49ers-Rams, the 49ers appear to have I suppose, appear to have righted the ship. The Rams are the scrappy little engine that could, that just can't seem to get over the hump. I do like this Austin Davis kid, and not just because he lit up the Cowboys. I like his fire. I like the fact that they just named him. They named him the starter, regardless of Sean Hill's health. And St. Louis traditionally plays San Francisco really, really tough. I think the Rams are going to win this game in St. Louis. Senior, I know you love the 49ers.
Yeah. I mean, you look at St. Louis and, you know, nobody's throwing on them. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that you can run like hell on them. I see the 49ers with Gore and giving Hyde some time, too, just pounding the ball on the ground. And their defense is a heck of a lot better than what the Rams looked at last week in their big comeback win with the Eagles. You know, I don't know if Austin Davis is going to be able to light up the 49ers like he did the Eagles. I know he won't. I don't care where the game's being played. I say San Francisco pounds it on the ground, controls the clock, and wins 24-13.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably more of a consensus type of pick. It's just, if you look at the history, San Francisco, particularly since Kaepernick's been the quarterback, has had all sorts of problems with the Rams. Worse versions of the Rams than what you see here, and the 49ers aren't quite as good as they were last year, at least in my opinion. So I think the Rams can pull this one out. What do you think, Keith?
Yeah, I'm going to give the Rams the edge for being at home. Like you said, they match up well. For some reason, the Rams beat the teams in their division and then get their ass kicked by everybody else.
It makes no sense.
I can't figure that out. I don't know. Is Zach Stacy going to play?
Most likely.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is going to be an ugly game.
Yeah.
17-13.
That's exactly how I see it, Keith. And I mean, that's how they play the Niners. So, I mean, you see like 14-13, just a, you know, mocked up game. The teams know each other so well. We'll see. And then the last game of the week here, guys, last game we haven't covered, is Detroit going to Minnesota. And what is actually a pretty interesting game. Minnesota, Bridgewater should be back for this one, which I think makes all the difference for them. Detroit coming off a bad loss, just a bad yeah. loss at home to Buffalo. Now they're going on the road. If Calvin plays, it's probably better for Calvin not to play. He's got a high ankle sprain. He's not himself. And that offense is not anything close to what it normally is. I mean, he's the single, outside of quarterbacks, he's the single most important player in the NFL to a team's offense. When he's on the field, they're a top 5 or 6 offense. And when they don't have him, they're like, I mean, I think they're barely middle of the pack. With that said, Minnesota is not particularly good. It's a tough one to call. I like Detroit. Again, kind of like the Green Bay game where I'm kind of holding my nose when I make the pick. A lot of tough games this week.
Yes, there are. I'm gonna take the Vikings in this one. They got the home field advantage. It's the division game. Bridgewater will be back. And not only is Calvin most likely not going to play, I don't think Reggie Bush is going to play either. And if Joique Bell doesn't play, he's still, you know, nursing that concussion. That offense is going to be putrid. Golden Tate is going to be double teamed. It'll be up to basically the tight ends, and I don't think they're good enough. I think Minnesota, I don't want to call it an upset because they're at home, but I think Minnesota wins.
And it would technically be an upset, but if Minnesota won the game. Senior,
yeah,
take us home.
Okay, I'm going to go along with Keith, too, especially with not looking like Calvin Johnson's not playing. You know, it turns it into a game of two really not so good teams. So you just kind of go with the home team. And I like what I saw from Teddy Bridgewater 2 weeks ago. I mean, the Vikings with Christian Ponder and the Vikings with Teddy Bridgewater is a huge, huge difference. I mean, he looked pretty solid. He looked very composed. He He's going to have to be. It's going to be a test for him because that's a vicious front seven he's going to be facing. I don't think he's going to have to put up, you know, the Viking defense has been at least respectable. Even though they've given up a lot of points in some games, it's more been a function of, like, the offense, really. But Ponder throwing all those picks last week, you know, they're just impossible for them, the defense, to stand up against Green Bay. There was actually a point in the second quarter where they had 3-3 and outs in a row against Green Bay, and they just kept getting thrown right back on the field, and that's just impossible for a defense. I think them going against the Detroit offense without Calvin Johnson, they can put up a pretty respectable performance defensively, and Bridgewater can get enough in it in just an ugly game, just an ugly win. An ugly, low-scoring win for the Vikings is the way I'm going to go.
Good stuff. So, fittingly, the Cowboy ends out on the island on the last game. Great show, guys. That's going to do it for us here. Keith, it was great having you back, my friend. And I know the
I know
the listeners love having you too. So let's make this a weekly occurrence. How's that sound, buddy?
You got it.
Seeing you as always. Are you on vacation or something? Because it seems like you've just been in the film room, just every game. You're concentrating on. You know, I watched the game and I just watched one guy, and you know, I mean,
I haven't been working this week, so. I had a little more time than usual, and I totally enjoy watching like that and focusing on certain things. It's a great thing that the NFL Network does for anybody out there. You can probably get it on demand if you don't have time to be, you know, at your TV when they show it. But again, the play, you just run right into each other, and they might leave a play or two out here and there, and they give you a graphic as to what happened, but they show you an entire football game in a half hour because there's no downtime. And it's a great thing to focus on certain things like watch the line play, which I think is so, so critical in football. Let's face it, that's where most games are decided. We all love watching the skill guys and everything else, but the great majority of games are decided in the trenches. The team that dominates in the trenches wins, but when you watch a game, you don't really watch that. But to get in, as you call it, the film room, to sit there and just forget about the ball, you know what's happened in the game, and watch the line play, and you get an idea of why teams are winning games. And on that particular Patriots game, watching Ryan Wendell was unbelievable last week. I'm telling you, he literally played like a Pro Bowl guard, and I hope that kind of thing continues. For everyone out there, check it out sometime. NFL Network Rewind, they call it. Game Rewind, game and a half hour. Real good thing to do after you've already seen the game for real. Excellent.
And if you want to do it like Senior does it, you turn the lights off, you lock the door, you know, and you grab a notebook and a cold beer, right? And
there we go.
12-hour shift. He's not working. He's working on the lounge, and that's why we love him. But great to have you on, as always, Dad. And we'll definitely be back next week. This is a real interesting slate of games this week, and I can't wait. It's going to start off, hopefully, with a good one tomorrow night, Thursday night, with Houston and Indy. Keith's calling the blowout, Senior and I think it's going to be close. So that's what we do here. We debate, and it's been a fantastic show. So for Senior, for Keith, I'm the Cowboy, and I'm out. We'll pick it and we're home for sex. Freak of the week, are you in the mood to fly to the stars with Jackie?